This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Can I change the subject?
Have it.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
How much can I follow in sports? I'm supposed to know who's on drink? This is crazy. Valparaiso. I know names on Valparaiso.
Earlier on the show, senior MLB writer for The Athletic, Andy McCullough. Oakland guard, Jack Golke. Coming up, Michigan running back, Blake Corum. Actor and producer Ty Sheridan. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Great chat with Jack Golke of Oakland University Athletics and the basketball team that bounced Kentucky last night behind his 10 three-pointers. That was a delightful chat at the top of hour number two of this program. The actor Ty Sheridan, whose new film, Asphalt City, is going to be coming to a theater near you next Friday. He's in studio joining us in a few minutes' time. But this show welcomes back to the program a man who used this space, and it was an honor to do so, to announce that he was going to return to the University of Michigan for another year. And he is the 100%, 1 million percent, complete embodiment of the phrase, those who stay will be champions. Fresh off the field of the University of Michigan Pro Day, Blake Corum back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Good to see you, Blake. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, man. How are you?
How was your Pro Day? How'd that go?
It was great. You know, a lot of scouts came out. It was good being back, you know, with the fellas, with Team 144, you know, seeing other my guys compete. And I feel like I killed it, man. So, great day.
Okay, very good. And so what was it like to see all your friends and teammates once again?
It was great. It was great seeing them, just because, you know, everything happened so fast after the Natty, right? Like, as soon as we won, we came back. Yeah, we had a parade, but then boom, you know, everyone was, you know, off to Dallas or off to, you know, Florida or Arizona, wherever they may have been training. So we didn't really get to talk much, you know. So being back, you know, this whole week, we've all been coming in and training together. And, you know, we're all chasing the same dream. So, you know, it was great, you know, seeing the fellas and being back in Schembechler Hall.
So your own, like, de facto homecoming is what you're saying.
Yeah, it was a homecoming that – it was a quick homecoming, right? You know, homecomings usually happen, you know, a little while after. But, you know, it was about 8 weeks, but it was a homecoming for sure. And my teammates, they killed it today. You know, I'm really happy with, you know, how today went.
So now that you're a couple of months removed – Blake, and almost to the day, as a matter of fact, of the national championship game, what are your recollections of this run for you?
It was an amazing run, man. A lot of adversity, though. A lot of adversity was sent, you know, our way. But I'm so glad, you know, I was able to come on the show and tell, you know, everyone, especially, you know, the Michigan fans, that I was coming back to win a natty. And, you know, the team, We bought into the process, you know, we bought into that brotherhood and the culture, and, you know, we worked our butts off, and, you know, when it seemed like everyone was against us, you know, we stood tall, you know, with ourselves, with our fan base, and we just kept pushing, and we reached our end goal. Now it's a natty, and, you know, no one can take that away from us. And, you know, we went down in history, and now it's, you know, time for another Michigan, you know, team to repeat what we did, but try to be better than us. But it was amazing, man.
Well, you know, I want to get to that before we end this interview that's just gotten started with Blake Corum here on the Rich Eisen Show. And so what happened for you? Walk me through your personal itinerary after that national championship game and what you have been up to get ready for the draft here.
Yeah, for me, it was locked in, you know, locked in on, you know, the next step in my journey, which is the NFL, you know, preparing for the combine. So I was down in Florida training at Pete Marmorito's down in Aventura, Miami. And it was great, just working my tail off. There was a bunch of, you know, other NFL athletes down there training. So I got to chop it up with them, you know, pick their brains a little bit. But I've just been working my butt off, you know, getting ready, like I said, for combine and going back and not even doing no more combine training, just training, you know, real football stuff for Pro Day, which we had today. And so, you know, I've just been, you know, meeting with different coaches, you know, just trying to get an idea where I might go. But ultimately, you know, it's up to God at the end of the day. And, you know, whatever team, you know, sees that, you know, I fit best believe they're going to get a great player, you know, someone that just cares about winning. So, you know, that's what I've been doing, you know, after we won that natty.
So what were some of the combine interviews like? What did they ask you at these interviews?
They were great. You know, for me, it was more just, you know, talking ball. You know, there was no character issues. There was nothing we really needed to go deep in about. So every time, you know, I would have an interview, whether it been formal or informal, you know, we're watching film, you know, I'm drawing up plays, you know, we're getting to know each other a little bit. So it was great. You know, they're telling me, you know, things I could work on, you know, or what do I think I need to work on? And me, you know, being that I hold myself to a high standard, you know, I think my whole game can get better, right? So, you know, the interviews have been great, you know, with the time's ticking, and, you know, so now, you know, that pro day is over, I'm excited to, you know, see what top five teams, you know, might have me come, you know, draft night or draft day, whenever, you know, my name will be called.
So Blake Corum here, fresh off the field at University of Michigan Pro Day right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Have you visited personally with any teams yet at their facilities?
Not at their facility. I have one coming up, and then, you know, you have some local days that you might hit.
Sure.
But,
who do you have coming up? Where are you going?
I'm going to L.A. Going to L.A.
Los Angeles, as in the Chargers. Is what you're saying?
The Chargers.
Who do you know? Who do you know there? Do you know somebody there, Blake?
I think I might know someone there. You know, I'm excited to go out, you know, talk to Coach Harbaugh, talk to, you know, the new staff that I don't already know. And see what it's like out there. But, you know, I've had meetings, you know, all week, you know, in person. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had dinners, you know, lunches. And so, you know, I've got to, you know, chop it up with a bunch of great men, great coaches. But that is, you know, my one, you know, top 30, they call it.
Yes.
You know, I'm excited about that. I'm excited about, you know, other meetings I have coming up, local days. I'll be going to the Lions and the Ravens local day. So, you know, I'm excited, you know, to keep, you know, going on this journey and come, you know, whether that be the 25th, the 26th, 27th, whenever. Best believe, you know, I can't wait to find out where I'm going and whatever team gets me.
And, you know, some people might say, oh, of course Jim's going to have him out, you know. But I'll also tell you, I'm a little surprised because, I mean, what does he not know about you, right? Or does he just want to introduce you to everyone around? Like, what do you think? What do you think is going to be getting out of that? Obviously, he knows exactly who you are. He knows exactly what you can bring to the program here, right?
I think obviously, different running back coach.
Right.
And they didn't really necessarily meet with us at the combine.
Got it.
Coach already knows all of us, right? So, you know, just to meet, you know, everyone else, get to meet everyone else. You know, maybe check out their new facility that I heard they're building, and just see what the environment is like in case, you know, I do end up, you know, being out there with Coach Harbaugh. But at this point, you just never know.
Of course.
You know?
Wouldn't that be something, though?
No, that'd be crazy. That honestly would be crazy. It'd be really crazy if I picked up the phone and I hear, you know, who's got it better than us, right? So that'd be crazy. But, you know, I'm going into this process like I know there's a right fit for me, and I know there's a team that, you know, really want me. There might be a couple teams that really want me, and, you know, I promise these teams, like, they're going to get everything, you know, out of me for sure.
Who took you to dinner, if you don't mind me asking?
There was a bunch of us. We had a great dinner with Mike Tomlin. Just a great dude, man. I really enjoyed that dinner. It was something special. There was a bunch of us.
What do you mean a bunch of you? A bunch of you with the
teammates.
Okay. Teammates?
Yeah, a bunch of my teammates. Yeah. It was just, you know, kind of like a get together, break bread.
Tomlin, you know, took you and a bunch of Wolverines to dinner, is what you're saying?
Yeah, his coaches.
Okay.
That was their meeting with us. So it was a great time.
Okay,
so
what can you share with me about what Tomlin said and what he's like? I know exactly what he's like, but I'd love to hear what he shared at a dinner like that.
You know, I'm not going to say too much, but it was really just, you know, boys being boys, or, you know, just barbershop talk. You know, it wasn't necessarily about football. It was more so, you know, just, you know, chopping it up. You know, he had a bunch of, you know, coaches there. It was a good time. It was fun.
Blake Corum here on the Rich Eisen Show. Have you met with the Cowboys at all?
At the combine.
Okay.
Not since.
Do you meet Jerry? You meet Jerry himself?
I did. I saw I went out to dinner with my agent at the combine. Mm-hmm. And I saw Jerry Jones in the restaurant we were at. at the table. I did see Jerry.
You know they need a quarter. They need a running back in the worst way, Blake. They need one. They need one just like you.
Hey, if they like my game, you know, hey, come get me. You know, whatever team, you know, respects my game and sees, you know, the good in me and what I can, you know, bring to the team, on and off the field. You know, hey, my name's in the draft for a reason. Come get me.
Blake Corum here on the Rich Eisen Show. You're up for that, right, TJ? He's a Dallas Cowboy fan in the house right here. So
listen,
that's okay.
Blake. Listen, my brother, listen. Come on home, baby. Come on
home.
I mean, it could be home.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's basically it. What and everyone, as you know, would be lucky to have Blake Corum on the show. So, all right, that's pretty cool. So back here in Ann Arbor, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you're in the office of the great Dave Avloff, the sports information director. Walk me through what's behind your right shoulder with those lines through certain logos that it's right there on that grease board ledge. What's that, Blake? You want to walk me through what that is? What is that?
Well, I would love to walk you through what that is.
Yes, sir. Please.
As you can see in 21, we beat – you know, Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just cross that off.
Yeah, that's right. And then what happened the next year?
22.
Yeah.
We beat them again.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. And then?
And then 23,
yeah.
I think we beat them again and then went and won a natty.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Wolverines, we've been killing it, you know, with all due respect, you know. we've been killing the game, you know, and we just got to keep it up.
Okay. Very good. Yes, that's what I thought that was behind your right shoulder. So I appreciate you, you know, confirming.
Shout out to Dave for having that in here.
Okay. Yeah. And that's the question is, you know, everyone in Columbus. And by the way, I appreciate you being able to say Ohio State, not that school down south or whatever, you know, because they can't say, they won't say, they'll say Michigan. They'll X out the M. You know, they won't set school up north, TTUN, all that business. I'm glad you're able to just say it like an adult.
Whatever,
you know,
helps them sleep at night. You know, if they got to say that, they can't say, you know, Michigan or the University of Michigan.
Yes.
Yeah, them saying, you know, well, the team up north makes them sleep better at night. They keep saying it. But.
Exactly. But you do know that they all feel now that you and the 17 other of your teammates that – wound up at the combine, now that you're gone, that this is a foregone conclusion, certainly since a ton of them came back and they got some Alabama kids that, let's just put it mildly, you beat at the Rose Bowl, that they've got those kids now on, that there's no chance that Michigan's going to add a fourth one of those next year. How do you respond to that, Blake?
Hey, them boys at practice right now, you know, practicing for a reason. You know, today was the first day of full pads. So after we get off this interview, I'm going to go check them out. And, you know, I know, you know, they didn't fall off. I know their heads didn't get big. I know they're back to work like hungry wolves. So, you know, I know they did, you know, they went to the transfer portal pretty heavy. And, you know, got some guys and some of the guys, some good players, you know, came back. You know, I got up to them. But, you know, we have some dogs over on this end, too, that are still hungry and, you know, chopping at the bit. So, hey, we're not going nowhere, man.
Okay. And this photograph, Blake, that I think has become iconic personally. What happened? What's this one?
Dude, that was a second play of the game. Penn State got hit, you know, solid hit. Just split it open. I don't know. My helmet came down a little bit and the skin just pulled. And I just had felt, saw all the blood on my visor, and I'm like, dang, something happened, you know, but can't stop now, you know. We have a full game to play. And then in the second half, we came out and ran it 32 times straight. That's when I knew, man, this team's special.
Well, this team is. Right, and that was Sharone Moore's first win as Michigan head coach during that period where Jim wasn't there for the second time. And in the final couple minutes I have with you here is, what can you say about Sharone Moore's readiness to be the full head coach of this program? Because, again, that's the other part that you hear from Columbus and Ohio State, that another reason why Michigan's ready, ripe to get got is because Jim's gone and Sherrone Moore's there, forgetting completely that Sherrone Moore's 1-0 against Ohio State himself. So what do you say about those? And there are some Michigan fans that are even concerned about Sherrone Moore's readiness. What do you say about that, Blake?
I have no worries, you know, because he has been under, you know, the great, you know, Coach Harbaugh, you know, learning from him. And, you know, Coach Moore, he's going to add his own little twist to it, right? But, I mean, you got to think he has more top 10 wins than, you know, a lot of coaches that are, you know, been coaching for 10 years, right? And so the level of readiness that I see in Coach Moore, the, you know, he's a player's coach, you know, he loves to smash, you know, the players love him, right? They love his energy. He's vibrant. The players are going to want to run through a wall for him, just like we wanted to run through a wall for Coach Harbaugh. And so, you know, he's already had the taste of what it was like being a head coach, because we had to deal with some adversity with Coach Harbaugh being suspended and whatnot. And so, you know, he's ready. You know, he's ready. He's had, you know, some preseason games. So, you know, I'm excited to see, you know, what Coach Moore will do with the full season. You know, I know, like I said, they're out there practicing right now. So I know, you know, he's getting them ready, because it starts now. You know, it's not time to wait for summer or camp. You know, it starts now. This is when, you know, national championships are won. So, you know, I'm excited to see Coach Moore just, you know, do his thing.
And then lastly for you, Blake, what will a team get if they draft Blake Corum?
Absolute dog, man. Someone that's just going to come in, you know, work his tail off, you know, not say much, just go to work. You know, someone with a winning mindset, someone that only cares about winning, someone that cares about his teammates, someone that's going to have his brother's back, and someone that's going to ultimately, you know, bring the community closer too. You know, I'm big in the community. And so just a good, you know, human being on and off the field. You know, and someone just loves the game of football, man. I love it. Been playing it since six. You know, so they're going to get a great player.
And that's why Jim Harbaugh is bringing you in for your first top 30 visit right there. He knows that already, and he wants to introduce you around the community. And and listen, if you don't mind, Blake, just a moment for myself here. When you see Jim, I've already texted him. I don't know if he's got the same number just yet, but I already texted him. Did you see his garage sale that he had, Blake?
I did.
Okay.
What was it? $20? One bag, $20. You can get whatever you want.
It seems like, is that what it was? I had no idea. What's the scoop on the garage sale? What happened?
Someone told me. I don't know who told me, but they said for $20 or something like that, you could get a bag and you could fill it up, whatever you want. Hmm. You know? That's what I heard from the grapevine.
Oh my gosh. So I don't know if we're already too late if that's happening. But because
there was probably some great stuff in there, man.
I'm sure, because, you know, I if you don't mind, we'll put it up one more time here. In the very back, you see behind the sewing machine, there appears to be a lava lamp. I would buy that and put it in the studio. So if you don't mind, when you see Jim, hey, if the lava lamp's still for sale, I'd like it.
The rich wants it.
Yes, I want it. And for sale, though. I'm not asking for it for free.
You're asking for a handout, you'll pay.
That's correct. It's the least I can do is to pay the man for his lava lamp, because he's paid it forward to me, and you have as well. Would you mind telling him that? If the lava lamp's there, I still want it.
When I run into him, next time I see him,
great,
I'm going to ask him if he still has that lava lamp that he had at his garage sale. Or if you still have it, can you ship it to you know, good rich Eisen.
Yeah, that's right.
He put it in his studio.
That's right. And go blue, sir. Blake, thank you for. Oh, do you know what? Oh, shoot. One more time. I'll give you, if you don't mind, one more question for you. Pound the table for JJ McCarthy and what you think he can do at the next level, Blake.
Oh, man. I wish you would. I don't know if you saw it, but he was out here just slinging it today. You know, he was letting it go. But, man, JJ is such a good quarterback, and his ceiling is so high. You know, whatever team gets him, they're getting a field general, someone that loves the game, you know, a team player, and someone that is a great quarterback. He can stay in the pocket. You know, he can roll out the pocket. You know, he can run. So he's a threat. You know, he's really a threat. And like I said, his ceiling is so high, and you can just see the growth from his first year, you know, to his junior year, you know. And you can already see the growth from when he was training. I think he was in Cali. You know how much better he's got. So, you know, he's going to be a high pick. You know, he's going to make a lot of money, and he's going to make a team very proud.
Well, I mean, you hear the narrative. I'm sure that he didn't have to do it, because folks like you and Donovan Edwards and the rest of the run game were doing it. And so therefore we haven't seen it if he can do it because he wasn't asked to do it. You've heard that narrative, I'm sure.
I've heard that, but, you know, I just block that out. You know what I'm saying? I block that out because that's not true.
You block it out. All right. Thanks, Blake. You're the best, man. Thanks again.
Appreciate
it, man. Go Blue right back at you. That's Blake Corman. I'll see you out here when you're visiting the Chargers, hopefully. How about that? Jim Harbaugh is going to give him his first top 30 visit, and hopefully Blake will bring a lava lamp with him for us. So, okay.
That'd be great.
There you have it. That's the latest from Michigan's Pro Day. Let's take a break and bring Ty Sheridan out of our green room. Asphalt City. Let's talk about that. Wait to hear who's in this movie with him.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. With Indeed, everything hiring is all in one place, and it makes it so easy. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences each day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. The more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join the more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Indeed.com/podcast. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
I got an email today from the LenPenzo.com HR department. I find it really interesting. I'm an employee of one at this company, but somebody from the HR department sent me an email telling me that I had a raise. If I just opened the attachment, I could see how much my raise was.
Make sure you click on the links that are in there, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm excited.
Find out more by searching the Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, now one big happy family back with our Roku channel audience. We just saw a clip of Asphalt City, available in theaters next Friday, March 29th. It is a terrific film that premiered at the 2023 Cannes Film Festival. And the production company Dogwood Pictures, the debut film of that new production company that is launched by the actor and producer of this film, Ty Sheridan, who's here in the program. By the way, congrats on the first, you know, maiden voyage for a production company, too.
Thank you. Like yeah, no, I appreciate that.
That's pretty cool. Sean Penn, too.
Yeah, yeah. I actually did my very first film with Sean. So
which film was that again?
It was a movie called The Tree of Life. And I was 11 years old at the time.
Come on.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, my best memory of Sean is we were shooting down on the Gulf Coast in Texas. And he was staying at the beach house right next to us. And my parents were out on the front porch having a cold beer. And they saw Sean pull up and he was walking across the yard. And they said, "Hey, run over there and ask Sean if he wants a cold beer." And so I ran across the yard and I said, "Hey, Sean, you want to come have a cold beer with my mom and dad?" And he's like, "Sure, I'll take a cold beer from the 11-year-old bartender." And so he came over and had a beer with us. And so, yeah, we had a very friendly kind of first experience together. And then it was cool. You know, Sean does a lot of work through his organization, CORE, and got very involved during the Malibu fires with the fire department there. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, he has a very personal connection with first responders. And I think through the process of making this film, I mean, they're such an essential part of our society. So really, this is what this film is about. It's a very close look at two medics, one, you know, a rookie who's new, the new kid on the block, so mm-hmm. to speak, and then Sean, who's, you know, a 30-year veteran who's had lots and lots of experience.
So did you reach out to Sean and say, "Do you want to play this role?" Because, again, this is your production company, your producer here. Were you the one who picked up the phone and gave him a call?
So I had – okay, so this film has been around for a long time. I've been trying to make it since 2017, 18, something like that.
Uh-huh.
So we reached out to Sean. I remember sending Sean an email in, like, 2018, and he said, you know, timing's not – right, exactly. And then years went by, and we went back to Sean, and after all his work, you know, during the pandemic and with the fires, I think he had a lot of excitement around it. And so, yeah, Sean was the person we always wanted to make this film with. So we have went full circle and got him on board.
Well, and again, you, Ty, so many people know you for Ready Player One and obviously the Cyclops in a couple of X-Men movies. And so obviously you and Sean Penn jump off a page when you see a cast member. Also, for the purposes of this show as well, when you look down a cast member, I see the name Mike Tyson on it.
Never heard of him.
Mike Tyson is in this film.
Mike Tyson is definitely in the movie. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have the floor on what on Mike. Well, because, I mean, I saw him in The Hangover, you know. I mean, I know his I know his filmography.
Has he ever been on your show, by the way?
Oh, he has. Okay. He's been in that chair a long time ago. Yeah. Oh, he's been here.
Wow. What
And as a matter of fact, when you walk out of here and you see the photos on the wall, you'll see a photograph of him acting as if he's about to bite my ear. That's on the, that's on the wall in the
classic
hallway.
Okay, I'll
so how did Mike Tyson get involved in this?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember exactly when Mike got involved, but yeah, we reached out to him, you know, through the process as we were putting the film together. And yeah, he was so much fun to work with. Mike is apparently obsessed with Sour Patch Kids. Okay. And was eating, I watched Mike Tyson, Iron Mike, crush like 20 packs of Sour Patch Kids back to back. We were actually shooting a scene, and it was a really long night. It's a long scene, and, you know, we're getting the last shot of the scene, and I look over while we're shooting, and I see there's like 30 packs of Sour Patch Kids on the table in front of Mike, and the camera can definitely see the Sour Patch Kids, so I'm like, should I? We can't use this. So I said, hey, guys, can you see Mike's Sour Patch Kids? Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah. Mike's like, oh, sorry. I had to put it under his binder. He's like, okay, we're ready. You know, so he was a lot of fun. A total sweetheart. And is actually, you know, from Brownsville, which is pretty much where we shot this movie. So, yeah, walking around the Woodhall Hospital in Brooklyn with Mike was pretty interesting.
I had to be. All hopped up on Sour Patch Kids. So are you saying that Mike hit craft services like he has most of his opponents in a ring, is what you're saying?
I think that's a fair statement, yeah.
Well, and you as the producer, you needed to make sure.
Guys, we need more Sour Patch Kids for Mike. Come on.
Who's in charge of the Sour Patch Kids for Mike Tyson?
We need more.
That's funny. I had no idea about Mike. Now Jake Paul might have to find out about that too. That's nuts, by the way. Did he look like somebody who can go in the ring? He's 58 now, right?
Almost 57.
Yeah, he's going against Jake Paul. He's going to actually get in the ring.
I've seen his training. He looks good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's great.
I guess we shouldn't put it past him. There he is. You check him out. And what is his role in this film?
So he plays the captain of the station. Yeah. And there's a scene.
So he's giving Sean Penn orders?
Yes. And one scene, I don't want to spoil it too much, but sure. In one scene, there's a confrontation between Mike and Sean. It's pretty great.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
You must be sitting back there going, what am I putting together right here? That's pretty cool.
It was pretty awesome. Yeah.
All right. I got to check out Asphalt City coming up in theaters near you Friday, March 29th. Does it blow your mind sometimes that it does feel like we're living Ready Player One in real life right now? Like,
yeah,
that movie was ahead of its time in a way.
I think we have been for a while, you know, like even through social media, everyone has a digital profile that they spend a lot of time focusing on and curating for themselves. So in a way, I guess we are living kind of in a virtual reality already.
How did you get involved in that project?
That was, so we shot that movie in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember auditioning for it, and my agent called me after I auditioned, and he said, they're going to go with somebody else. You didn't get this one. I was like, wow, it's all good. You know, I can't wait to see the movie still. Mm-hmm. Really excited about it. And then a few weeks went by. I got another call. They said, hey, I think you should audition again. They want you to audition and try something a little different. And I did.
For the same role?
For the same role.
Okay.
And then Steven apparently responded to it, and then I went to did like a chemistry read. Mm-hmm. With Steven, and I remember walking into the room, and usually when you go in to do a chemistry read for a film of that size, there's the producers are there, and there's a couple people shooting it, so you've got, you know, guys operating the camera, etc. There's kind of a crew.
Mm-hmm.
There were two people in the room other than Olivia Cook, who I was reading with, and it was Steven and our casting director. And I said, I was thinking, who's operating the camera?
Mm-hmm.
And then Steven said, okay, well, let's go. Let's do this. And he picks up the camera, and I realize he's shooting it himself.
And for those who might not know, the Steven's last name is?
Spielberg.
That's the one.
And he's the one who's like, I'll shoot it? Yeah, so he's 2 feet away with the camera. You know, it's the first time meeting Steven Spielberg.
And how old are you at this time?
I was 19 at the time.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow. So Steven's operating. He's like, okay, all right, action. You know, he's got his little handheld camera. It was such a cool experience. And then he kind of, I remember he told me, I said, hey, I don't know if I'll get this role, but I just want to say thank you so much for all of your movies. I'd be a different kid without your movies. And I told him, you know, E.T. is one of my favorite films of all time. And he said, you know, funny story about E.T. And he just, went into this whole story about how they shot it chronologically and the kids never, you know, knew that E.T. wasn't real. They had the operator behind a curtain the entire time. And I just thought that was so nice and genuine of him just to tell me this story,
right,
about this movie that I was obsessed with as a kid, still am.
And then, so when did you find out you got the role?
That you won it,
essentially.
It was a few weeks after that.
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah.
So wait a minute. So you're saying the kids in the movie thought E.T. was real while they were shooting it? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's the crux of the story. Is E.T. real? There was a lot of ambiguity around it, right? They could see wires coming out, but there was still this kind of magical element that they never saw the operator, right? So in their minds, you know, they could imagine that he was real. And he said that was a big part of, you know, the chemistry between E.T. and the kids. And so the last scene, whenever the kids say goodbye to E.T., that was the last scene they shot. With E.T. in the film.
Oh, my God. I'm crying all over again. And, Mike, I'm sorry to spoil it for you. E.T. is not real.
What?
I'm sorry, Mike. Did we just break that news?
Yeah, I was.
To you? He's a 58-year-old man as of 2 days
Drew
ago.
Drew Barrymore and myself, like, at that time, both believed that E.T. was real, and I still believe E.T.
All right. Well, you're going to cry in your bowl of Reese's Pieces later on.
Can I find them?
Where you can do them? That. Okay.
Ty
Sheridan here on the Rich Eisen Show. And how many people just hit you on the street about being Cyclops? Hardly, never. Because why? Because why is that, do you think?
I don't know. Not that they should recognize me or something like that. Maybe it's the visor.
Is that it? That was some football players don't get recognized because they're always wearing helmets.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, makes sense.
So you and Emmett Smith have that in common.
What's funny is I had, you know, I did Ready Player One where I'm wearing this visor on my face because I'm in a, you know, it's in a virtual reality.
Right.
And then I did 2 X-Men movies where I'm wearing a visor on my face, which is actually crazy. You know, the most challenging part of that role was acting without your eyes, right? Because I have these red lenses. You can't see my eyes,
yes.
And that's a huge part of course, what you're able to do.
They're a window into one soul.
Exactly. And it was an exciting challenge for me, but I couldn't see. There's like 8 people in every scene in that movie. And we all have, you know, marks on the floor. One's pink, one's green, one's blue. You know, yours is blue, right? But when you put on a red visor, they're all white. And so many times I would come into the scene and they'd say, okay, guys, stop. Ties on someone else's mark again.
Because you couldn't see.
And it's like, it's basically like, you know, you have peripheral vision, but you're basically looking through a box like this. You can't see your feet, right? So you're constantly tripping over stuff on the
side. So when they're over budget, it's because you couldn't see. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I don't know if I go that far. I don't know, budget for other reasons.
That's pretty wild, man. Well, congrats on everything going on in your career.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Asphalt City is again and you got awarded with a breakthrough award at the festival by Variety, right? Is that what happened?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Congratulations on
thank
that.
You very
what
much.
Is that? What does that award look like? Is it on a mantle somewhere?
I think it's a plaque.
Okay, it's a plaque.
I probably gave it to my mother. I can't.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good for you.
I don't. What do I need that for? I mean, you know.
You know.
She's
you're a breakthrough anyway, Mom. And Mom's probably been telling you that since you've been born. Yeah, so she deserves the award.
Yeah, she's definitely number one fan for sure.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, it was. It's always a crazy experience at Cannes. It's highly people are highly critical. It's a highly critical audience. So
well, the French, come on. Never heard that story before.
Going back to the Cannes Film Festival was like the One of the first, the very first time I was at the Cannes Film Festival, I was 16 years old. It was mm-hmm. the second film I worked on, premiered there, and in competition, we got a 20-minute standing ovation. It was for a movie called Mud, and it was really the moment that I realized the power of cinema, and it's the moment that I realized this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And so it was cool to go back there with this film that, you know, is such a passion project and a labor of love for a lot of us, and a really important, you know, story about paramedics and how important they are in our society. So to take it there and to go full circle to that place was really special.
Yeah, and having the film, a guy that you as an 11-year-old once offered a beer.
That's right. That's right.
That's pretty cool, dude. That's pretty cool. Have you ever seen him in Fast Times at Midridge?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's all I
would
talk.
I mean, as a kid, you know, that's.
Oh, please.
You knew him as Spicoli. Right?
Of course. And which is kind of amazing that, and I think of it almost all the time when I see him in these roles.
Right.
You know, that's just amazing
yeah.
how he's that. Because I always thought that he's Spicoli.
Yeah.
And now I don't, like, obviously he's a serious actor.
Oh,
but,
he's.
But I would ask him all the time about Fast Times. Do you ever do that? Ever ask him about that?
No.
He's too, not even when he's had a beer or two with your parents?
What's that?
Not even after he's had a beer or two? That's when you got to start.
I don't think I'd seen Fast Times at that point when I was 11 years old. But yeah, he's
good point.
Sean is an interesting guy, and he especially took an interest in preparation for this film.
I mean,
we both did. I was going to New York off and on for years leading up to making this, and then we were both in New York 2 months ahead of the shoot. And doing ride-alongs, 12-hour shifts, Friday and Saturday nights, sometimes mm-hmm. Tuesday and Wednesdays, so 3 or 4 times a week with real medics going out onto calls, and then spending 3 or 4 hours in a classroom every day with the medics at Wyckoff Hospital in Brooklyn. They were our advisors and supporters on the movie. So
angels,
shout out to them.
They're all angels.
They really are. And the movie is it's funny you mentioned that, because the movie definitely is. There's kind of a call to the Archangel Michael
mm-hmm.
in the film, and but they really are the angels of our society, you know, that are shepherding, you know, they're the people that you call in the worst moments of your life. They're the people that you call on the edge of death, and
mm-hmm. or a loved one is doing that, and you're witnessing it. It's
right.
quite something.
Yeah, they move from one call to the next. You know, it's not like it's just one experience in a blue moon. It's all day, every day.
Well, and I'm thrilled that you're paying homage to them here, and also, again, in the film Asphalt City, which is available in theaters next Friday, March 29th, starring Sean Penn and our guest, Ty Sheridan, and oh, yes, we can't forget Iron Mike Tyson.
Iron Mike, that's
fantastic.
Right. Don't forget it.
Thanks for coming here, sir.
Thanks for
come back
me.
Anytime.
I
you want
it.
To come back anytime.
Thank
I got
you,
Ty
Rich.
Sheridan here
it.
On the Rich Eisen Show. There's some crazy action in March Madness. We'll hit when we come back right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Title Transference aired October 27, 2004. Director James Marshall, writers Todd Slavkin, Darren Swimmer. I really like this episode, and I'm surprised that you don't like it as much as you thought you did.
I actually respect your opinion more than I respect my own in general. When you say things are good and I check them out, they are.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Hi there. Sorry for the interruption, but are you enjoying this show on Google Podcasts? You should know that the Google Podcasts app is going away this spring. That's right, going away, gone as in no longer available. You can still enjoy this show elsewhere, though. Try out Spotify or Amazon Music, or maybe TuneIn is more your style. Whatever app you switch to, be sure to follow so you never miss the next episode. And thanks for listening, wherever you listen.
Then I went to Frederick, Maryland.
Okay.
Frederick Keyes.
Frederick Keyes,
and they
Maryland.
Made these bobbleheads, of which this is one of...
Oh, my God, a Shooter McGavin bobblehead.
Shooter McGavin bobblehead. Yes. So...
Guys, awesome. Yeah, here it is.
Amazing. There it is.
We'll have to place this in a very special spot here.
It's pretty funny. He's got the guns out, the double barrels, leaning on his putter. It's pretty funny.
Isn't this amazing? Did you realize when you were doing that, Happy Gilmore, that would be... something that would stick with you for the rest of your
no
career.
Idea. I don't think anybody knows when they make a movie if it's gonna, you know, have legs like this. When it first came out, it was a moderate hit, but now,
right,
people love it and quote it.
But it's neat funny. That you own this Shooter McGavin thing. Some other actors, I think, might not do that.
Well, yeah, I I enjoyed the movie. I was a joy working with Adam and Dennis Dugan, these wonderful writers. And, you know, it's just Judd Apatow was a co-writer. And these guys are, you know, comedy gold. So
right.
to be with them and to have this movie last as long as it has, it's opened a lot of doors up for me, you know, personally and
sure.
and then professionally. So it's just been a gas.
And did you come up with the shooting?
Yeah, I had no idea why they called him Shooter. Nobody told me anything. So I just started making putts and going, Shooter.
But so that was your call.
That was my call. And the very funny thing about this movie, I told the story, but forgive me if I've told you before.
It's
but
okay, go for it.
End of the movie, you know how I hate in a golf movie where they cut to the hole and the ball rolls in? I want to say, could you please let me make it? It's about a 32-footer. Mm-hmm. And it's not on a golf green. It's on a botanical garden. So he told me he'd give me like 7 tries. And that's try 5, and I lifted out twice. But people were betting. The crew was going, he's never going to do this. And so you see who your friend is? And when nice. I put that baby in there and I did choke on that baby and I just did that whole Shooter shimmy thing at the end.
That's amazing.
That's the one they left in the movie and it's so freaking wrong.
Fantastic. And then there's news coming out from Christopher McDonald to talk about back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Florida Atlantic, last year's Cinderella and Final Four team opening up its follow-up campaign, fell down to Northwestern by 10 points, then stormed back to take a 2-point lead. With seconds to go, Northwestern ties it, goes into overtime, and they're about to win it by 10. Yeah. So the Northwestern Wildcats are going to move on. San Diego State's up at halftime on UAB, and Western Kentucky is sticking with Marquette, just leading by 1 as we're heading to the final TV timeout of the first half. New Mexico and Clemson going to tip off after that. So that's your March Madness update right there. How about the news? I guess we just showed on our Roku channel only segment a video that has gone viral because we put the story that Christopher McDonald told when he was here a few years ago about him being Shooter McGavin and Happy Gilmore and how he's the one that came up with the Shooter. Because he had no idea why his nickname was Shooter McGavin as a character. And the choke on that baby was legitimate. A legitimate line of him talking to the rest of the crew that was betting that he could not make the putt that he eventually did make because they shot it in a local botanical garden here in Los Angeles. It wasn't a real golf course.
Right.
So it was kind of a rough track that they didn't think he would make the putt. He wanted to make it in one shot to make it look legitimate rather than just having the ball roll into a cup on a tight shot. And he did make the putt and he goes, choke on that baby, because he was talking to the members of the crew that were betting against him. It's a great story.
Yeah. Great story.
And at any rate, we just heard today, he said on a radio show, not ours, but that Adam Sandler showed him a draft of Happy Gilmore 2. That it might be in the works here.
Said he saw Adam a couple weeks ago, and he says to me, you're going to love this. And I was like, what? And he shows him the first draft of Happy Gilmore 2.
Oh, man, just after.
He's like, I don't know if I should be saying this.
Yeah, but, I know.
Happier Gilmore.
Why not?
Happier Gilmore.
Brock laughed when I said that.
You know.
Obviously, we lost Carl Weathers.
Yeah, just after the news of Carl Weathers passing.
That'd be great.
I'd be in on that. Don't you think? Happier Gilmore is not a bad name.
Then that's it right there.
Yeah.
Or Unhappy Gilmore.
Happy's on the senior tour or something and runs.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Who cares? What do you think? It's got to be a legitimate plot. I mean, you could come up with anything. Please.
Like a Lyft tour? Does Happy join Lyft?
Happy joins Lyft. There you go. That's
is that what
funny.
It is?
I don't know.
Did you also see, this delighted me, there's a Beetlejuice 2.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea this was in the making. That's coming out in September. Jenna Ortega's in it. Yeah. I'd imagine is Winona Ryder's daughter because she's in it.
Yep.
And Michael Keaton reprises the role of Beetlejuice.
Wow.
Yeah. It's called Beetlejuice. Which, as you know, is one shy of
Beetlejuice. Don't say it.
Monica Bellucci is in the cast as well.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, yo.
Oh, yeah.
Willem Dafoe is in the cast.
Of course he is. Yeah,
and oh my God, is that right? Catherine O'Hara is back in it.
Nice. 6 foot, 7 foot.
Oh my word. I'm in on that one too.
Oh man, that's mandatory.
That is some funny stuff right there.
I love Beetlejuice.
So I'm in on all that. What else? What else from our youth would we want to see? How about a Fast Times at Ridgemont High reunion?
Oh,
they're
okay.
All grandparents at this point.
It would actually be
like a 50th reunion or 40, whatever.
The mall's still there.
the wow. Reunion. Come up with
Faster Times at Ridgemont. See,
look at you.
No,
you're on fire.
No. It's not Faster Times. It's Slower Times. Are you kidding me? What do you think? They're all doing the same thing.
Slow Times.
You get, anything to put Phoebe Cates back on the silver screen.
I mean, in a pool, I'm good.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Mike, there's certain things to just let my subtlety sometimes rule the day. You guys keep taking the nail and hammering it on the head.
Sometimes people don't get your subtlety.
That's not true. That's not true.
I'm not saying your subtlety is wrong, but
why would I bring up, honestly, like when anybody brings up Phoebe Cates from that film, what do you think they're bringing up? What other scene are they bringing up?
Her working at the
pizza place.
Okay, got it. Understood. Exactly. My bad. Sorry, guys.
It could be that.
I've never seen it.
Wait a second. Oh. Of course he has. He's just kidding.
I'm not kidding.
You've never seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
No.
You've never seen...
That just totally missed me.
What? He's not telling the truth.
I swear to you.
Bro, that I know is you a decade, and you're telling me this is the first time I'm finding
remarkable missing piece.
I just missed it.
Is it too old for you now?
You just missed it.
I mean, when I was a kid, I just missed it. You just don't ever see.
We missed The Godfather too, and we caught up with that later.
We missed The Godfather.
Godfather also. Brockett said he told me he had not. You have not seen The Godfather Part 3.
Well, I mean, that's fine. That's understandable.
But one and two.
You've never seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I was a year old when it came out.
But it doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with it. What do you think? I saw it in the theater. Of course, I didn't see it in the theater.
Damone.
But you were 13 or 14 years old when that movie came out. So you're gonna get a VHS copy of that when you're 16.
I'm gonna be aware of it.
At your friend's
house. I'm gonna be aware of it.
So you're saying you don't watch movies that came out before you were born?
Can you guys just listen to the words that I'm saying?
Yeah, but your argument is
I missed it.
This is a guy who doesn't watch anything in black and white because it's too old to be good.
That's understandable, though.
I'm saying
it's not.
When Rich is a teenager in high school, someone has a VHS copy of that at a sleepover. And so I just totally missed it.
Excuse me, a Blu-ray disc. A VHS.
Blu-ray.
Yeah.
When your 15 Blu-rays were out?
No, it wasn't a Blu-ray.
Beta.
No, okay, I get it.
I'm just saying I missed it. I don't know why it's big. I never saw Days of Confused. I never saw those movies.
Okay.
But Caddyshack, you got all those, right?
That was my father.
Have you seen?
You know what I mean?
Okay. You should see it. By the way,
I just laugh at Spicoli. I just kind of nod and laugh.
I think Spicoli would still resonate.
Yeah.
Like, I know the reference, but I never saw the movie.
And the scene
I'm just saying it's just weird because I think it's still
100%. It's still good.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you should do this weekend, Chris.
Nope.
Okay. And finish up the Manchurian Candidate that you only watched half of.
So am I DVR. Probably.
No, Chris, I'm okay with you not finishing that one though.
You don't encourage him.
I'm just saying, like, if there's anything he should watch,
my gosh.
Manchurian Candidate or Fast Times.
Oh, Fast Times.
I would say watch Fast Times over Manchurian.
I am surrounded by morons. Great way to finish the week. Great way to finish the week.
You stupid Mike.
By the way, Manchurian Candidate only came out 20 years before Fast Times.
Okay. Whatever. it's a classic. It is a brilliant movie. It is a brilliant movie way ahead of its time, and it is worthy of you seeing it. Trust me. By the way, my bracket is going to be busted if Marquette doesn't come back here.
No. Marquette's down at the half.
Marquette's down at the half by seven.
Oh my gosh.
I did plenty of games
to Western
year.
Kentucky. Okay.
Okay. Mets are, good enough. Up 3-2 over the Yankees in the bottom of the sixth.
I want to thank today's guest, Andy McCullough. I want to thank also our friend Blake Corm for chiming in. Balake Corm. Jack Gulkey from Oakland chiming in. And of course, Ty Sheridan. Larry David, check it out this weekend on our YouTube page or the Rich Eisen Show Collection page. It was 40 minutes of laugh out loud hilarity, and hey,
I'm supposed to know who's on drink?
Dwayne Johnson. The Larry Bowl is the UFL's Pro Bowl game with no goalposts. You're welcome.
Hey, everybody. This is Dan Bespris, host of Fantasy NBA Today, a daily fantasy basketball podcast. We cover every box score from every game, every day. Plus bonus shows on buy low opportunities, players to stash, schedule analysis, and really anything you could need to smash your league into deliciously tiny pieces.
Catch the Fantasy NBA Today podcast, part of the Believe Network, on YouTube or wherever you listen.